Hey, Bill Nye, the science guy here.
This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams.
I'm Mr. Deity, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I command you to listen now, or I will smite you.
I am a sound scientist. Came to evaluate the evidence on a closed case, highly classified, confidential, in a race against the clock.
Hi, I'm Todd Stiefel.
And I'm Jess Constantine, and you are listening to The Humanist Hour, the official podcast of the American Humanist Association.
Humanism is the life stance of being great without God.
Excellent, Todd. I enjoy your enthusiasm. And it's great to hear your voice, by the way. Welcome back. So listen, why don't we start our show this month with giving our listeners a little update on your LLS Light the Night event.
Yeah, so the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society project is an effort by Foundation Beyond Belief with allies across the whole free thought movement, including the American Humanist Association is an official ally and is helping promote it. We would like people to sign up local teams and to join local teams. And later on, we're going to start working on actually fundraising. And we want to raise $1 million, which we have a $500,000 matching challenge going. So every dollar raised gets matched dollar for dollar. And I think we can make a big deal. I think people will certainly take notice if we can raise that much money in the fight against cancer. So people can learn more by going to foundationbeyondbelief.org/LLS. And I encourage all of our listeners to either form a team in your area or join a local team in your area. Or if you're not able to form one yourself, encourage your local group to do so.
Cool. So Todd, it's been a long time. I hardly recognize your voice. Why don't you tell listeners what you've been up to?
Oh boy. Let's see. So I was at the Reason Rally, of course, which is why I missed last month's show, which was awesome, and then went straight from there to Rock Beyond Belief, which was a very interesting experience. We got to go to Fort Bragg and host a festival for essentially atheists and humanists right on the main parade field. It was kind of fun watching the military brass and leaders of the base do what they had to do by the book and claim everything's fair in the military because, according to the books, it's fair.
Right.
But the reality is very different, which the media picked up on, and they weren't really fooled. So very interesting. Definitely some mixed reactions from the soldiers who were there. You know, some of them were really enthusiastic and definitely really interested, and clearly atheists thrilled to be there. And
so the crowd was, first of all, how many people attended? Do you know?
It was about 1,000, I'd say. Unfortunately, we had wicked, wicked rain and nasty weather. We actually couldn't even turn on the electricity, the weather was so bad, until after we were supposed to have started. So
of that 1,000 people, what was the breakdown of, I guess, general public versus soldiers?
It's hard to say because I think a fair number of them were in civilian clothing.
Okay.
So that makes it challenging. But, you know, just civilian clothing to military clothing, probably 70-80% civilian clothes, but who knows how many of them are soldiers or families of soldiers, just hard to say.
Right. And were there people there protesting?
No protests. I definitely heard some grumbling from a few soldiers about, you know, I'm only here because I have to be. But you know, they seemed appreciative. We had free food for soldiers and their families, and so a lot of people were eating that and enjoying that and just really thankful for the free food. And
that's not true, right? They didn't have to be there, right?
Some of them did. Some of them had to guard the event.
I see.
There was a fair number of guards in case there were problems and things like that, just like some people had to do the Billy Graham event, and
right,
which is part of the problem. Like at the Billy Graham event, people had to jump out of airplanes to go. The Golden Knights were forced to perform, and they didn't even know what was happening until they landed. And so one of them actually was an atheist who... And Rachel Medley was the one who got to jump out, and she was interviewed by PBS about it and who talked to me about it and was saying that, you know, she was shocked when she actually landed and looked around. It's like, why the heck is there a proselytizing event going on at this military base? But it was pretty cool. She got to jump at Rock Beyond Belief as well.
Oh, that's cool.
So that was pretty cool. And a whole bunch of her compatriots joined in. So that was pretty sweet. Yeah, pretty cool that she got to do the same thing for us. But it just points out one of the problems here. You've got people who are serving their country and they're being forced into taking part into events they may or may not agree with, whether they're evangelical, atheist, or otherwise, which is why all of these events need to end. But they haven't. We're finding out they're still going on at other military bases, and we're working on it.
Yep.
Interesting stuff.
Indeed, indeed. So, but all in all, you had a good time?
I did. And Reason Rally, of course, was fantastic. Just getting a look out at the crowd. It was one of the happiest days of my life, to be honest. Just looking out and seeing it be huge and successful, even though the weather wasn't nice there either. And being backstage, talking to all the different people there and going out in the crowd. And, you know, and then the most fun part was getting to dance backstage to Bad Religion with my kids and some friends. And you know, at one point, Jessica Alquist and Jen McCrate and a couple others were back there, and Sarah, and we're just dancing away with my kids. And oh,
nice.
Good fun.
Yeah. That was a moment that I was sort of proud of us as a movement for actually doing it, for actually coming together and just having this, what seems just like an unstoppable force. You know, it's hard to believe that we can't accomplish anything when you have that many people there who just, I don't know, there's just a lot of energy there.
Well, tell us about your day, Jess. What was your day at Reason Rally like?
First, I want to say it was really cool, Todd, to see you there backstage and to be sort of on the other side. Just, I was proud of you too. I mean, I was proud of us as a movement, but I was like, look at Todd. Look at my baby. You look so dapper in your suit. And you know, my boss, I was proud of my boss. I was proud of Roy. We were one of the sponsors of the event, but I don't know. It was cool to be a part of the content, not just participating. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Obviously I got to meet Adam Savage, and I got to talk to James Randi, and I got to talk to Peasy for like 2 seconds, and being there with Richard Dawkins, and I got to be on stage to listen to like Eddie Izzard, and so I got to sort of see from the vantage point of the speaker, but I can only imagine what a rush you must have gotten for being up at the podium.
That was a rush. Oh my gosh. I just saw the video today for the first time. It was the first time I even heard how it went. It's just funny watching you walk up there, and my suit's all is dry because when it was pouring, I tried to stay dry for when I'd be on stage, but that proved to be pointless because within like 10 seconds of walking out, my suit is just glistening like it's like it's black lamé or something like that.
You mean you weren't wearing a sequins? Drenched
outfit. It sure looks like it. It sure does. But oh my gosh, what a rush talking before like 25,000 people. I mean, that's a once in a lifetime opportunity. Just really fun and intense at the same time.
Yeah, definitely. So listeners, we're going to do our best again to sort of create that feeling of putting you there. We're going to play some more content from the day. Todd, tell our listeners who we have on today's show.
Well, let's see. We've got highlights from Richard Dawkins, and we also are going to have some James Randi, and we're going to play Eddie Izzard, and I think we're also going to play my speech as well.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to hear from Christina Rad.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
She was great up there.
She was. She really was.
It was so funny because backstage she probably wouldn't like me saying this, but it was true. Backstage she was so nervous before walking up there, and then she gets up there and she was just so natural and so insightful and so funny. She just tore it up. I was real happy for her.
That was kind of a neat thing about being backstage, like getting to see these people who do these events time and time again, but even probably for some of them, like speaking in front of 25,000 people, like you said, it's a once in a lifetime opportunity. I can imagine, like, I mean, when does a comedian get to perform in front of 25,000 people?
It's rare, for sure.
Yeah. So it was neat to see them backstage and to be human before going on stage, because I'm sure a lot of them were nervous.
And then you could see the difference when they walk off the stage and they're all excited because they just got to do it and they're relieved. And
absolutely. So, Todd, who should we start with this month?
Let's start with Eddie Izzard.
Okay, Todd, sure. So we'll start with Eddie Izzard, who is the stand-up comedian and actor from England. And I thought Eddie was hilarious. This was my first time getting to hear him, and I liked that he had the sort of same kind of stand-up comedian sort of this sort of stream of consciousness style of comedy.
Yeah, he was awesome. He is a really funny guy. He's been called the Lost Python by John Cleese, which is a pretty nice compliment. And he's been in tons of movies. My personal favorite role of his is he played Mr. Kite in Across the Universe, which is a fantastic musical movie about the Beatles. And yeah, he was just awesome up there. He tore up the stage, of course.
Listeners, here he is, Eddie Izzard.
Hello, America. Thank you for the weather. If you know anything that I do, I tend not to write things down. I tend to I don't make it all up as I go along, but I just tend to ad-lib it. But I thought I should write something, try and write, because it's a rally and talk to people. The first line that came out of my fingers, because I was doing that as opposed to my pen, it was to say to you today, and I don't know if this is the right thing, but anyway, it's if God was alive today, he'd be proud that America has Obamacare. Of course, he isn't alive because God died in the Second Punic War against Scipio Africanus. But it's great to be here. No one talks about God's father. If God did exist, what would his dad have said? And God was probably a fighty little guy saying, "Oh, I can do stuff." And his dad's going, "No, you're never going to do anything." He says, "Oh, I could be a god one day." Well, I don't know. What, like Caesar Augustus? Yeah, like that, mate. Who did manage God's status at the end? Well done to him after killing a lot of people. But I don't believe in God. I have two proofs for not believing in God. First of all, God, if you're there, we're here in Washington, come down now. If you're there, this is a pretty good time. I'm sure Fox News would love it. Just come down, say hello. I have been around the world talking my strangely crafted bollocks that I talk, and he never comes down. And this weather isn't from God. If God was in charge of the weather, what was all those tornadoes that go down the Bible Belt? What does that mean? That weather is just weather, ladies and gentlemen. So God, just come on. Why not do it? Because I don't believe in God, but if he's there, fine. Fine, okay. We just got some questions about World War II. What the fudge cake was going on there? 50 million, did it have to go that high? So I don't believe it. Also, if God does turn up, we do assume that he would have a deep voice. That is one thing. You do assume he would, "Hi, I am here and I am God." But he could turn up and go, "Hello, I'm God." And he'd have to come through the trees or something. He couldn't just walk on. If he just walked on it, you go, "That's not God." "Hello." So you're like, "Yeah, yeah, I'm just backstage having a coffee." And it wouldn't change. No one would go, because in Europe, it's kind of different to here. I know you've got God going on, and there was a woman from Romania talking about Eastern Europe, but we really have moved beyond God in Britain, for certain. Interestingly, in politics, no one gets elected. In America, you've got to say, "God bless America." No one says, "God bless Europe." No one says, "God bless the UK." You can't get elected with that. Interesting, huh? So the times, they are changing, and it is a good thing. My other proof of God, that there is no God, is that God should have flicked Hitler's head off. Surely, if there is a God, he should have just flicked Hitler's head off. My, what is he waiting for? There were some clues there. Hitler wrote a book called Mein Kampf, which is German for "I'm going to kill everyone." That's a little clue. He did those huge speeches at Nuremberg where he said, "I'm going to kill everyone." And all the Nazis were there going, "Nazis, Nazis. Kill everyone. Good idea." And it would be so easy for God, using the long arm, just like Monty Python, just come down and just flick Hitler's head off, right at a big bit. When he goes, "And another thing." And all the Nazis, "Nazis, Nazis." "Nazis, Nazis, Nazis." "Hans, Hans, his head's come off. Hitler's head, Hitler's head's come off." "Hey guys, I think Hitler's head's come off. It's just behind. I think it's all over. I think his head's come off. His head, it's his fucking head. Hans, it's all over." What's supposed to be? Supposed to be? Turn it inside out. It's good luck in India. It is. It's an Indian symbol. Good luck. Bizarro, huh? God should have done that. Even when Mrs. Hitler, who was called Schicklgruber, I think that, when she had the baby, surely the baby should come out. Hey, why should we call it Adolf? So suddenly the head goes boom, just drops off. Oh, it's broken. All right. Say God's not supposed to get involved, then what are we going into the buildings for and doing all the mumbling on Sundays? The Sunday mumbling must add up to something. 50 million dead, when do you come in? Even the German army tried to kill Hitler, and no, it's God existed. No, I'm going to stop that. What? He's not there, kids. He's just not there. And also, but if he is there, he could be French. Because you always assume, if English is your first language, you assume that God can, I am here. But he could come down and, je suis ici. Je suis Dieu. Je suis ici, maintenant. Qu'est-ce que vous voulez? Je suis le Dieu. And we'd all be going, bonjour. I didn't do much of the, fine. Then he'd have to go, I was in the sky. I did not, but you don't speak French? Why? Because all the French people think, if they're religious, they think in German, they think he's German. Russian people think he speaks Russian. They obviously don't wake up, they don't have dreams of them, you know, speaking English. Anyway, so he's there. So you people, you've got an election coming up. So you are the thinking people. You're the self-choosing, chosen people, you know? Not chosen by God. You chose using your own brain power to come, to do, to think, to stand up, to come out of the closet and say this stuff. It takes to do this. I'm a transvestite. I've come out of two closets. It's amazing. There's truckloads of closets out there. So the stuff you need to know, stuff that which I've learned from Wikipedia, which is really good to learn. No, it's good because there's a lot of good stuff in there. So beginning of time, right? The beginning of time. There's two beginnings of time. There's the religious one where the world started 6,000 years ago, and then there's the science one. It started 4,500 million years ago. They're not the same. They don't overlap. In the Venn diagram, if Venn was here doing Venn diagrams, there's no mix on that one. They're two separate circles, miles apart, right? And religious people do tend to say, well, you know, science is just full of theories. Well, religion is just full of stories. They're not even theories. It's one level below. It's just what somebody said. Having said that, I think the stuff in the Bible, the stories are probably true. They're handed down through history. It's the mystical top coat. And then they went to the clouds and had a baby in a sunspot or something like that. All that stuff up there. No, but the downstairs stuff. Mr. Jeezy Creasy, yeah? I think he was a real bloke called Yeshua or Joshua. Jesus is the Greek version of the name. And if he did stuff as a human, fantastic. What an amazing thing. If he's the son of God, you're supposed to do that. You're supposed to be magic. You know, you've got magic powers. You're doing water and wine, fish into gerbils, whatever you do. So the beginning of time, 4,500 million years ago, that's when the world started spinning, yeah, boom, boom, boom. In the religious version, it's all this Genesis, God made the world in 6 days. The first day he made jam, helicopters, baked potatoes, rabbits, dogs, fish, Gunga Din, helicopters and rabbits. Two more rabbits, little rabbits were getting on. Tuesday, he made spoons, Krakatoa, the Virgin Islands, trains, cake, socks and dung. The third day, he said, I gotta get a list because I'm just making shit up here. By the finish of Saturday, he'd done everything. He'd made stuff, everything he could. And then the seventh day, he prayed. There was no one about, so he prayed to himself. Dear me, I'm fantastic. Look what I've made, a big spinny thing. That's great. Then he did a bit of singing, a prayer, the hymns. Kumbaya, myself, kumbaya. Kumbaya, myself, kumbaya. And from the eighth day, what did he do? If he exists, why did he do this beginning of time 4,500 million years ago? From day eight up to us, there's nothing. It's just rubbish. It's got stromatolites out there. Look them up in Wikipedia when the rain stops. It's just boring. And then there's the dinosaurs. If God made the dinosaurs, he was on crack cocaine. He was going, Jesus, look at this. Look what I made. Look at these monsters. I'm just smoking some crack. And look at these crazy things. And if Jesus exists, Jesus is the seventh son of God, yeah? A's is B's is C's is D's is E's is S is Jesus. Jesus. Jesus is the Irish son of God. Peasus did deliveries. Teasus turned up. Hey, Teasus, piss off, mate. So, yeah, it's the dinosaurs don't make sense. They're just big, stupid monsters. Why would you make them? They do nothing. Think about this. We as human beings, we have our failings. But we have made poetry, we've sung songs, we've made bridges, we hold rallies, we do banjo stuff, we can do knitting. There's a lot of stuff we do. Dinosaurs did none of that. All dinosaurs did. And we were on the Earth for, you know, we've been on for about 5 million years, 2 million, 5 million. Dinosaurs, 165 million years. They were treading around here, doing nothing. Just going, rawr. That's all they did. Morning to night, 24-7, for 165, rawr. The big ones, rawr. Small ones, rawr. Thin ones, rawr. The ones that flew, rawr. Why would you make that? And if you've made it, why would you keep it going? There's no dinosaur poetry at all. There's no dinosaurs that ever went, rawr, 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 rawr. Instrument. Very tall, big head, big neck, big feet, big legs, small arms, small hands. Ukulele, drop it in there. Ying, ling, ding, ying, ding, 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 ding. Perfect. No, they didn't do any of that. And there was no dinosaur religion either. They didn't do religion. There were no dinosaurs churches. We're pretty damn certain about that. Very few dinosaur vicars going. Stone tools. No religion can happen before language. So religion didn't turn up until we started talking. So there's all that time. If a god started this world, why didn't he put religion should have come in on day 8? It doesn't make sense. It needs sense. Random. If the god is the god random, I would not worship him. I'd sort of say hello to him, but not worship. Because the god random, I want a god with a plan. The way that the world has planned, it just looks like no plan. If God's up there, he's going, what's he doing? He's going, oh, earthquake down there, bad hair day for that guy. There's no plan. It looks like George Bush Jr. It just, there's no plan. He's supposed to be very religious, isn't he? And I'm sure God's going, nah, I don't know him. I don't know him, mate. I don't know who that guy was. You can't have religion without language. It's impossible. You just can't have someone get together and go, everyone will be going, no, I have no idea. You can't have the Ten Commandments without like, two, three, four, no. You can't have it, and you don't need the Ten Commandments. There's only one commandment, because I'm someone who can pick and choose. As a stand-up comedian, you do look around. You can look at all religions and all philosophies. I see religions as philosophies with a mystical top coat of marzipan. And so I picked and choose, and I came up with two things that I believed in, which is one, which is treat other people as you like to be treated to yourself. Do unto others as you like to. That's the golden rule. It's a very good one. And the second one was what goes around comes around, which is actually built into the first one, isn't it? Because if you treat other people, they won't come around. If you bite their ass, then they'll bite your ass. So there's only one. That's the only one you need. You don't need the rest of it. The Ten Commandments are not needed. It's just the one. Treat other people as you'd like to be treated yourself, and maybe we'll get to the world where it's all cool. But anyway, then the classical age was many years ago, 2,000 years ago, then it went down, and we had the Dark Ages, the Middle Ages, and then we had the Enlightenment, and then we had the Industrial Revolution going on. And Charles Darwin, back in England, in 1841, wrote his his most famous book, of course, called Great Expectations. And it was a story of an amoeba called Pip who went to stay at Lady Badcrumble's house. She had a very hot daughter called Alice who lived down the hall with the rabbits. And he showed the book to his wife, and his wife said, God, Charlie, this is a really weird book. You've gone way off on this one. Charlie Dickens, I think you've lost it. He said, I'm not Charlie Dickens, I'm Charlie Darwin. And he was in the wrong house. Charles Dickens and Charles Darwin live two vowels away from each other on Dictionary Lane, just down from Alphabet Street, where Prince lived with Machiavelli. Now, later on, Charles Dickens wrote excellent version of Great Expectations. And then Charles Darwin wrote his most famous book called, of course, Monkey, 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 You. This caused outrage in the monkey community. Monkeys were furious. They put Charlton Heston on trial in the famous monkey trial. He was sentenced to do two monkey films back to back. The first one was called Monkey Town, and the second one's called Let's Go Back to Monkey Town and Do Similar Things. Evolution, I can explain very simply with fish. Fish swim in the sea, they are not evolved. They're very basic. They have no ambition. Fish have no ambition. Look in their eyes. No ambition. They don't care. They just, they go to school, but they don't learn anything. And then fish are on land. The mudskipper is on land. He's called a mudskipper, not because he skips on land and he's kind of a bit like that, but he's in charge. I'm in charge of this mud. And he's got ambition. Look at a mudskipper's eyes. You can see ambition. You can see Ferrari. Hold a mudskipper up. Look, you can see Ferrari, especially if a Ferrari is parked just behind you. Points in the right direction. And then fish fly in the sky. They fly, we don't even fly. They fly in the sky. And then and they must land in trees sometimes, and then birds will be going, oh, the fuck are you guys? We're the new fish on the block. And then it's all sharks and jets and that kind of thing. Now, that's evolution explained quite simply. Then you have the creationism, where God went shazam and just made the earth. And in 6 days, he probably missed out a few things. There are probably badgers there going, we haven't got any food. What, badgers? I've got badgers food. All right, badgers eat bok choy. Now we're not eating that. That's crap. What's wrong with bok choy? Looks like a vegetable that's given up. All right, you can eat asparagus. No, it makes your pee smell weird. That's not really brulee, though. I see badgers can be choosers. Don't give me a hard time. That's the only badger creationist joke you've ever heard in your life. God Washington doesn't like your jokes. Yes, I know that. I've been to Capitol Hill. So that's it. Now, creationism, through the sieve mind of a Sarah Palin type, went towards this intelligent design place, which was a clever idea to make it look like everything's intelligently designed or designed. But if you look at it, the design is all over the place. We have cancer. Why do we have poo and pee? If there is a God, why do we poo and pee? We eat stuff, we do poo and pee. It causes cholera, it causes dysentery, a load of poo and pee diseases, yeah? Get rid of poo and pee. If you're God, just take it, just eat stuff and do stuff. Why is it there? And they say, oh, you need the poo because of the crops. No, crops grow because they want to. You're God, you can do this stuff. There are stupid things out there. There's just design all over the place. If it's done by one person, he is on crack. Like cows have four stomachs. Why do they need four? They bring it down, they bring it back up. They chew it again, they bring it down, they bring it up. After the fourth stomach, surely cows are going, this didn't need to come back up, I don't think. Should have gone just straight up. We have one stomach. Why do they need four? We have the appendix. The appendix processes grass. We don't eat grass. Unless we used to. It's there your entire life, your appendix, going, any grass, mate? Is that grass? Is that grass? Is that grass? Appendix here. Do you want to run it through? What is that? Is that grass? Creme brulee. Are you sure? Just... Arsehole. What's that? Asparagus makes a piece, mate. You can just, it's like big grass. You can run it through the appendix. Come on, mate. This is ridiculous. I'm calling intelligent design. Yeah, is she there? Yes, the appendix. You guys having a laugh? Well, we've been here 17 years, no grass. so we want to be somewhere else. Where do we want to be? In the back of books. In the back of books. We want to be in the back of books. Put us in the back of books. We want Roman numerals, no page numbers, just endless lists of boring crap so no one ever reads us. Do that or we will explode. Your appendix explodes. It's the only part of your body that just randomly explodes. Intelligent design? I think not. In conclusion, ladies and gentlemen, I was an agnostic. Maybe some of you are. Maybe you know people who are agnostic. Who, you know, you're not quite sure what you want to believe. Or I think if you are an agnostic, you're probably agnostic in case there is an end of time. And then you can be in the agnostic queue, in the agnostic line. And you can say, because God will be there. And you go, hi. No, I was never an atheist. No, I was agnostic. Yeah. I was never quite sure. And now I'm sure. Mainly because you bloody turned up. Yeah, so can I come in? Because if there is a heaven and hell, there's only toilets. It's probably like heaven's got toilets, there's no toilets in hell. Probably something like that. But yes, so now I'm an atheist, but I'm a spiritual atheist. So this is what I think. Because I don't believe in God, but I do believe in us. I believe in people. I believe we can change things. If you ever get depressed, draw a line from the ancient Egyptians to now, and we are doing it. We are changing it. We've got gay marriage in Europe. You're arguing about it. We've got it. Things have moved forward. We are getting there. And one day, hopefully, we will have a world government with a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And in that government, you will have a place where reason always wins and that religious dogma is always conquered by common sense. Thank you very much.
That was Eddie Izzard.
You can learn more about Eddie at his website, eddieizzard.com. That's eddieizzard.com.
And we're going to move right along to our next speaker from the Reason Rally, Christina Radd, better known as ZOMG, it's Chris from YouTube.
So she's something of a YouTube phenomenon, Todd. She has 87,000 subscribers with over 9 million video views. That's pretty cool.
That is impressive. Christina describes herself as a shooting star leaping through the skies. I'm a satellite. I'm out of control. Here is Christina Radd at the Reason Rally.
Thank you. You overestimated how tall I am, though. Well, it's been like 2 days since I've been telling people how nervous I am about talking here today. And now to ease my nerves, they come up and tell me, well, it's okay, we're just gonna make you go after Richard Dawkins. So no pressure. Seeing so many people here is absolutely overwhelming, especially with the wind and the rain and baby Jesus crying, I guess. I mean, if this event was to take place in my country, I am sad to say it would have probably been 5 people rallying. And maybe 2 of them would be very enthusiastic and 3 of them would be there hoping they might get free stuff. And this is not even a joke. It is really that sad. So it is so exciting to be here. And I've been... Thanks. For many months, this event has been all over the place, and I see that non-believers are still pretty confused about it. I mean, why are you people going there? Why do you need to rally? What are you even gonna do there? You're really gonna drink infant blood and pray Satan's name and all that? And in all seriousness, there is this misconception that we get together just because we like to bash religion because it's a fun activity, and it's so much more than that. I mean, of course, there is the fun in it. But as far as I can tell, our criticism of theists, and I think especially creationists, has nothing to do with them just having a religion. There are so many religions and religious cults facts out there that atheists and, in general, skeptics don't even come close to mentioning. I've never heard an unbeliever criticize Jainism, for instance. I mean, a Jainist extremist is somebody who wears a fabric over their nose and mouth so they don't inhale and kill the little bugs. And, you know, they call Islam the religion of peace. I mean, those kind of things, I personally find them weird, but I'm not gonna go and militate against them. I mean, why would I? But the thing is, with the two monotheistic religions of Christianity and Islam, they account for more than half of the world population. And incidentally, these two religions have a few things in common. And if there are protesters here who say, no, my religion doesn't promote this kind of stuff, I suggest they should go read the book. About denial of science, there are still people trying hard to keep evolution out of school books or bring religion alongside with it, and also opposing contraception and abortion too, because there are only 7 billion people in the world and we obviously need a lot more. And also this idea that being gay is wrong and so you need to be punished for it. And now the punishment comes in the form of taking away some rights and liberties that straight people have, like the right to get married. Of course, the Bible and the Quran and these holy books, they don't actually tell you that you should prevent gay people from getting married. I never saw any scripture say that. What they say is that you should kill them. But of course, here in the West anyway, that kind of thing would land you in jail. So I think gay marriage is pretty much the only thing they've got. And that's kind of going downhill because more and more countries and states are starting to recognize gay marriage. It's not happening as fast as I would like to, and I'm sure the majority of you would like to, but yeah, we're going there. So yeah, we do tend to have a problem with these things, especially since these two predominant monotheistic religions still leave a huge print on social, political, and cultural issues. And I saw the protesters. Again, they seemed a bit confused, too, about what they were protesting. I don't know, some people were protesting Obama. I don't know what's up with that. But, yeah, this is why we are here. This is why we are here, because when religion takes over social, secular values, this is why we are rallying, and this is what we are having a problem with. I know there are people who say that we are getting here together. This just shows that atheism is just like a religion. I'm sure you've all heard this, right? People saying that atheism is just like a religion, believers saying that. Because they say apparently we also have our sacred books, like The God Delusion and so on. And then we have our prophets, like Charles Darwin, and we have our evangelists, you know, the people who are spreading the good word around, and then there are people who give their money away to further the cause. We have these gatherings, all this stuff that indeed you do find with religion. But you see, if atheism is a religion because of these things, then so is the Democratic Party, and so is feminism, and so is the NFL, and so is, yeah, everything else that involves people getting together and being active in any given field. I mean, what would really take for atheism to become a religion? First of all, we would indeed need a very old book that is, we hold as unfalsifiable, which is kind of hard when you're a skeptic. I don't know how that works. And this book should not only tell us that there is no God, but also should set the rules of atheism for us to follow. And I will get to that in a minute. Because if you're thinking, you know, Darwin's Origin of Species is pretty old, that's not a good pick, because first of all, it doesn't actually tell us that there is no God. And besides that, unlike a holy book, the Origin of Species doesn't tell us, you know, the rules of atheism. What is good, what is bad, what to do, what we are prohibited from doing. And most importantly, it doesn't tell us who do we have to hate and who do we have to kill. Which, as we all know from the best-selling holy books, is pretty essential. And then we obviously would need to have a prophet. And again, if you're thinking Charles Darwin, he would make for a very lame prophet, with all due respect, because he was never documented to do any kind of magic. A prophet doesn't just go around studying finches and writing science and all that nonsense. I mean, he does cool stuff, like healing the sick and walking on water and turning water into wine. That comes very handy at parties. You know, fun stuff like that. And it cannot be someone like James Randi either, or Penn and Teller, because they admit their magic is illusion, and a prophet cannot do that. I mean, come on. And by the way, you may notice that I refer to the hypothetical prophet as a him. That's because apparently it must be a him, like with any proper religion. And he must have some people following him around, preferably males as well, because vaginas are evil, I don't know. And then another requirement would be to base our belief, well, actually our disbelief, on faith. And there is a big problem with this too, because most non-believers are non-believers, precisely because they don't have blind faith. So how can you have a religion without faith? I have never heard of that. And how can you have a religion without prayer? You have to pray, and you have to continue praying regardless if your prayers are answered or not, because results are completely irrelevant to praying. We all know that. And also, you cannot have a respectable religion without a system of reward and punishment, preferably eternal, to scare people and bribe people into following the rules of atheism, which, again, do not exist. So as you can see, it's pretty impossible to make non-believing in God a religion, since this is not a system of beliefs. It's not even a belief in something. It's the lack of belief in the possible existence of something. So, you know, good luck with that. But this is a lot of talk, you know, to just justify it in a normal conversation. So in day-to-day life, when people ask me, when people tell me actually that I'm part of a religion because I'm an atheist, I tell them that yes, I have a personal relationship with reality. Thank you very much. And again, I have to say that the main reason I'm so nervous about this is that I think me being here is just not, is bigger than me, sort of speak, because it shows that, you know, this is a growing movement worldwide, not just here. And even if in some places it's growing painfully slow, we are everywhere. We are. Thank you.
That was Christina Rad. You can watch the rest of her videos at youtube.com/user/ZOMG. It's Chris, C-R-I-S-S. Of course, all these links will be available on the show notes page for this episode at thehumanisthour.org. So Todd, our next guest, well, to put it simply, he's quite amazing. Tell us about the amazing Randi.
James Randi gave a great talk as well. And he's been a stalwart of skepticism and free thought for quite some time, and probably doesn't need too much more of an introduction than that.
Yes, he's had a lifetime of achievement, which is why we are giving him that award at our conference this June in New Orleans.
Indeed. Indeed. That's going to be great.
So here's James Randi.
This is a remarkable audience. This is an incredible audience. But it's not an amazing audience, because there's only one person that deserves that adjective of amazing. The fountainhead and founder of the modern skeptical movement, the man that single-handedly debunked the faith healers on The Tonight Show, the man that puts the fear of God into all those psychics. Please help me welcome the amazing Randi!
Before I begin, ladies and gentlemen, this may be a disappointment to the majority of the audience here, but I, due to the inclement weather and the fire regulations, I will not be doing my naked dance on fire. I know this is a great disappointment, but I'll try to make up for it with something else. I find this a very strange circumstance. A gentleman named Rick Perry, you may know the name. Rick Perry. Oh, please, please, no opinions in advance. Got him. He was startled, did you see? I must say that Rick Perry, some time ago, because of a drought, he felt that it was necessary to pray for rain. He didn't get it, but we did, and we didn't pray for it. So there, that proves something, I think. I don't quite know what, but I'll work on it. Now, as a skeptic, I must admit that I'm not always as well received as I have been here today. I appeared before the public with my message on college and university campuses all over the world, and when I'm asked by a potential attendee as to exactly where I'll be speaking, I sometimes tell them, just listen very carefully. Listen carefully, and you will hear angry murmurings. You will hear the sound of scythes and pitchforks clashing together, and you'll see torchlight. I'll be there. Or have you never seen that 1935 film, The Bride of Frankenstein? Wonderful film. And I relate to it very closely, I assure you. This event, this rally, is very much centered on the secular point of view, of course. And I'm very firmly of the opinion that the greater part of the confusion that presently exists concerning rationality and reason is directly due to the persistent influence of religion. However, I'd like to deal with the greater general problem that now faces us. Beginning about the year 1700 or so, what we know as the Enlightenment brought about the application of rationality to all questions and problems. Thinkers and writers became free to pursue the truth however they wished without threats of sanction for violating established ideas. Sadly, the Enlightenment, it appears, is now over and done with. Those of us who are courageous enough to reject superstition, false authority, dogma, and wishful thinking have yet to recover from our previous administration's science-bashing philosophy. Isn't that true? Now, centers of learning have kowtowed to popular delusions by embracing ideas that do not survive proper examination in any way. They offer courses in poor thinking, and such acceptance also implies their endorsement. Many people no longer think for themselves, but surrender that process to the media and to the opportunists who happily fleece them as a result. Religion rules minds as it did when witch burning and angels seemed to be viable and believable notions. Millions of law enforcement authorities, social services, science teachers, medical practitioners, and politicians actually believe, ladies and gentlemen, despite overwhelming contrary evidence, that our Earth is only 6,000 years old, and that a malevolent deity, thanks a lot, brings floods, pestilence, and suffering to those who he, she, or it, whatever, chooses to hate, but rewards others who make themselves into human bombs. How delightful. This sort of belief has invaded the highest levels of the media, government, and the teaching professions. But how did such a widespread desertion of common sense and fact ever come about? Why? Because it's so much easier to have a simplistic view. Little or no thinking is required. Those who surround you will tolerate you if you simply don't speak up, and all you have to do is to allow the yahoos to take over while staying out of their way. Be careful, they do stampede every now and then. The woo-woos are active anti-science elements, but they're not nearly as dangerous to our security as those centers of higher learning who try to justify the awarding of science degrees in subjects that are anti-science in every respect. The truth of what they teach is not based on fact, but on emotion, tradition, and convenience. It's now become politically incorrect to question things like this. Enormous harm has been done to science by emphasizing quantity of data over quality.
and at the extremes, fraud and fakery over honest and hard, consistent intellectual work. Happily, science has self-correcting mechanisms built in so that mistakes and the occasional bit of fakery are eventually automatically eliminated. Left to itself, science has created and shaped much of the world in which we live, but constant vigilance can never be relaxed, or the woo-woos can and will move in permanently. Now, we of the James Randi Educational Foundation, which we fondly call the JREF, have been in the forefront of the battle against what's been termed pathological science, the careless, incompetent overemphasis on authority rather than on expertise. Plain stupidity, the tantalizing Nobel Prize on the horizon syndrome, and often just simple avarice. All but one of these are elements not unheard of in everyday life, and the layperson can easily relate to them. Now, philosophically, I'm both an atheist and a skeptic, but just who and what are we skeptics? Skepticism means having good reasons for holding any belief. We're cautious about drawing conclusions, but always willing to change our minds upon the presentation of new or better information. Don't, please, equate us with cynics, who, by current usage of that term, believe that people are basically bad or stupid. We believe, but always with good reason, remember, that most people tend to too easily accept supernatural, paranormal, or irrational explanations of quite ordinary events and claims that can be explained by otherwise careful investigation. We come from all walks of life and may have very differing worldviews, but we share a commitment to careful discussion and to respectful examination of claims and assertions about supposedly supernatural events or processes. We make our judgments and draw logical conclusions, but for sufficient reason, we'll withhold that judgment pending the arrival of more or better data. Now, my parents, bless them, more or less, they told me that a couple of folks named Adam and Eve were the original two humans. Duh. They were plunked down into a convenient garden to start our species going, they told me. But I still don't understand, folks. They only had two children, both of them sons. That's rather strange right there. And one of them killed the other, by the way. But somehow they produced enough people to populate the earth, and that was done without incest, which is a big no-no and certainly impossible given the facts of the story. Then some prophet or other made the earth stop turning. An army blew horns until a big wall fell down someplace. A guy named Moses made the Red Sea divide into two and made frogs fall out of the sky. Yeah, sure. We're asked to believe this, and I was, as a child, asked to believe this. And that's only a small start on one religion. We haven't even begun to miracle over, over flying horses in the Quran, Krishna stopping the sun, as happened in the Bible, of course. They wouldn't want to miss out on an act like that. The chap was named Joshua, somebody or other, I believe. And then there's Harry Potter. Oh, yes, I think you'll agree with me, folks. Harry Potter and the Wizard of Oz are much more believable and much, much more fun. I'll tell you, incidentally, that I've also looked into the claims of reincarnation, and I don't believe that one bit, though I used to in a former life. You laugh. Critics of this reading have chortled that we won't be seeing heaven, but I'll take my chances. Streets paved in gold, I think that'd be a huge bore. If I had my choice, I'd perhaps choose end-to-end Bill Maher shows for eternity, or maybe not. Folks, it's certainly time that we all grew up. Instead of forging ahead into the 14th century, we should be embracing the 21st by writing fini to belief in the bigoted, capricious, cruel, deceitful, genocidal, homophobic, insecure, intolerant, irrational, jealous, malevolent, misogynistic, racist, sadist, vindictive, and violent bully. Who demands constant praise, sacrifice, adulation, and ego support. Duh. Or the penalties he promises will be very severe. I have found in my observations that religious people are constantly fearful, trembling, and wondering if they've committed any infractions of the multitude of rules they have to follow. They are ruled by fear. That's not my style, and it's not yours either. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm so very grateful and sincerely flattered to be invited today to join these beautiful people with whom I share these feelings. My partner of 25 years cannot be beside me today because of some legal difficulties in which we're presently involved, but I will extend to you all his personal thanks for this great honor afforded us. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you.
That was James Randi, who, among other things, is the founder of the James Randi Education Foundation. You can learn more about him at randi.org, R-A-N-D-I.org.
And let's move on to a piece of the Richard Dawkins talk. He was fantastic up there. His full video is available in quite a few places online, so you can see the full version there. But we want to play a couple quick highlights, which are going to roll now.
Inspiring sight. I was expecting great things even in fine weather. In the rain, look at this. This is the most incredible sight I can remember ever seeing. It is a thing most wonderful that on this once barren rock, orbiting a rather mediocre star, on the edge of a rather ordinary galaxy, on this rock, a remarkable process called evolution by natural selection has given rise to the magnificent diversity of complexity of life, the elegance, the beauty, and the illusion of design which we see all around us, has given rise in the last million years or so to a species, our species, with a brain big enough to comprehend that process, to comprehend how we came to be here, how we came to be here from extremely simple beginnings where the laws of physics were played out in very simple ways. The laws of physics have never been violated, but the laws of physics are filtered through this incredible process called evolution by natural selection, to give rise to a brain which is capable of understanding the process, a brain which is capable of measuring the age of the universe between 13 and 14 billion years, of measuring the age of the Earth between 4 and 5 billion years, of knowing what matter is made of, knowing what we are made of atoms, brought together by this mechanical, automatic, unplanned, unconscious process, evolution by natural selection. That's not just true, it's beautiful. And it's beautiful because it's true, and it's almost too good to be true. How is it conceivable that the laws of physics should conspire together without guidance, without direction, without any intelligence to bring us into the world? Now we do have intelligence. Intelligence comes into the world, comes into the universe late. It has come into the world through our brains and maybe other brains in the universe. Now, at last, finally, after 4 billion years of evolution, we have the opportunity to bring some intelligent design into the world. We need intelligent design. We need to intelligently design our morals, our ethics, our politics, our society. We need to intelligently design the way we run our lives, not look back to scrolls. I was going to say ancient scrolls. They're not even very ancient. About 800 BC, the book of Genesis was written. Religion is an important phenomenon. 40% at least of the American population, according to opinion polls, think that the world, the universe indeed, is less than 10,000 years old. That's not just an error, that's a preposterous error. I've done the calculation before, and it's equivalent to believing that the width of North America from Washington to San Francisco is equal to about 8 yards. I want to echo what my colleagues from the Richard Dawkins Foundation have said. I am an outsider, but we're well-staffed in America, and we're going to spread the word along with our colleagues in other organizations throughout the length and breadth of this land. This land, which is the fountainhead, the birthplace of secularism in the world. And as I said before, let's let that tradition down. Thank you very much.
That was Richard Dawkins. You can learn more about him, of course, at his website, richarddawkins.net. And who else could follow Richard Dawkins but a man who needs no introduction? This is our very own beloved co-host, Mr. Todd Stiefel.
I'm here to introduce to you a personal friend of mine, Mr. Todd Stiefel. Now, if you had a good time at this event, it is because of Mr. Todd Stiefel, whose foundation donated a cool $250,000 to fund this event and bring Grand Religion here, and they're going to play a full set coming up. And we're not done yet, but for now I want to introduce to you my personal friend, Mr. Todd Stiefel.
Hello. How you doing out there? Yeah, I just heard that Fox News said this is a rally about pretty much nothing. Let's show them that they're completely wrong. You see, nearly 50 years ago, not very far from here, there was another rally, another march, the 1963 March on Washington. The church is given credit for that event, but many people don't know that that was actually a joint effort of both theists and atheists. As a matter of fact, the man who envisioned the rally itself, the man who headed the rally and spoke twice, was A. Philip Randolph, an atheist, an African-American, and a signer of the Humanist Manifesto, too. How about that? Much has changed since that time, and it's because of activism and activists like you. 50 years ago, it was still legal to ban African Americans from sleeping in hotels in this country. And today, a black family now sleeps in the White House. How about that for progress? Enormous progress, but the struggle is not complete. There's also been enormous progress for free thinkers. We are no longer burned at the stake of intolerance. We are no longer stoned to death with the rocks of injustice. We are no longer scalded with the brands of the Pope's inquisitors. No longer are our books burned. Things have changed, folks. They can't burn our internet. They cannot silence our ideas. But we have a long way to go. Today, 94% of American voters would vote for a black person for president, but only 45% would vote for an atheist. Today, we fear for our jobs. Today, we are respected and trusted less than rapists. Today, our donations are rejected by charities who'd rather not take our money than fulfill their missions. Today, our activists receive death threats. Today, a majority of Republicans and Democrats believe that you need a belief in God to even be moral. Today, we're shunned by our families and friends, and homeless atheists are created by bigoted parents. See, we have our rights, but we do not have equality. We must act and demand change. Discrimination comes from ignorance. And in this case, it is ignorance about our beliefs. See, secular values are American values. Americans believe in truth, love, and liberty, and so do we. The flawed values are from our friends over here who preach eternal torture, inequality, and hatred. Compare and contrast. See, we're told free thinkers believe in nothing, but that's a misunderstanding. We believe in a lot of things. We don't all believe the same things. I will say for you what I believe we believe in. I can't speak for you, but I can give my opinion. But you can give your voice right now. You can tell Fox News what we believe in. I'm going to list some things here that I think we believe in, and I want to hear you. I want your voices to ring out if you agree. So what do we believe in? We believe there is no rational basis to discriminate on the basis of race or gender. We believe our sex lives are our business, not the government's. We believe life has the meaning we give it through increasing happiness and decreasing suffering in the world. We believe healthcare is our decision and our doctors, not the bishops. We value teaching how to think, not what to think. We value science over the supernatural as an explanation for the world around us. We believe and value forming opinions based on reason, not authority. We believe moral principles are tested based on their consequences, not on the dictates of ancient books and preachers. We believe we should change our beliefs based on evidence, not make them immune to questions. We believe marriage should be based on love, not hate. And most of all, we believe freedom is based on we the people, not they the clergy. See, I actually think that most religious Americans would agree with those values. We have more in common with them than they may even realize. I'll give you an example. My wife, Diana. Right here in the front row is a Christian, and she makes the work I do possible every day. Diana, stand up. Give her a hand. I love you. Thank you. You make it possible, sweetie. You see, we can disagree on the ideas of God and faith. We don't have to love each other's ideas, but we can still love each other. Through hard work, education, and that love, we will gain our equality. Soon, people will see non-theists as equally capable of being moral, as theists. Soon, we will be a voting bloc actively courted by politicians. And perhaps that started, actually. Soon, from California to Mississippi, it will be common for atheists to be elected to Congress. Soon, from North Dakota to South Carolina, humanism will be seen as a respectable alternative to religion. Soon, across America and across the whole world, there will no longer be a stigma attached to being a free thinker. But we need your help. We need your help. We need you to do your part. Invest your time and invest your financial resources. Give to the sponsors of this rally here. Help them help us. We need you to get out and build and develop local communities to provide supportive networks to each other, especially those still questioning their faiths. The religious have centuries, millennia of a head start on us because they killed us. We now need to make up some lost time. Dr. Martin Luther King said, "We must not drink from the cup of bitterness and hatred. We can be angry about the injustice, but we can't let it get us down. We have to remain happy, joyful, fun-loving people. We could be the more fun people than them. We could have the most fun. We don't have to be repressed by their morality. Let's live happy, joyful lives. Yet, we can never compromise on our critique of dogma. We need to increase the understanding of who we are by coming out and living openly. This has been the most effective strategy by the LGBT movement. We need to learn from it and emulate it. We need to be, thank you. We need to be humanitarians. We need to do charity work. We need to choose to be good because it feels good, it is the right thing to do, and it will lead to the salvation of humanity. Not in the next world, but in this one. No longer will we let discrimination stand. No longer will we hide what we believe. We believe in truth, integrity, love, and honesty. We believe in freedom. We will gain respect as we gain the love of our friends, our family, our neighbors. We love and we deserve to be loved like anyone else. We are secular Americans and we will not stop until we have our equality. Thank you.
That was Todd Stiefel. Todd, where can people learn more about you and the work that you do?
You can learn more at stiefelfreethoughtfoundation.org and also at the website where I keep most of our updates, which is facebook.com/stiefelfreethoughtfoundation. You can like us there and keep up to date on what's happening. Yeah, I have to admit, it was really fun getting to speak on that stage. And pretty much right afterwards, Bad Religion comes up on stage and sets up and starts rocking out. So I had a lot of energy to spend jumping up and down on stage, which I burned holding my kids in my arms while jumping up and down for extended periods of time. Just such a fun time. All right, folks. So next month, we'll be playing exclusive backstage footage of interviews with some of the members of Bad Religion with a special guest host who's actually going to be using the footage in a movie, actually maybe even a couple of movies that he's making, which is pretty sweet. And we will then have the American Humanist Convention, the annual conference.
That's right, Todd. It's going to be our 71st annual conference where we are awarding Gloria Steinem as a Humanist of the Year, Ira Flatow with the Isaac Asimov Science Award, Deborah Sweet as our Humanist Heroine, and also Jessica Alquist is one of our Humanist Pioneers.
Yeah, Damon Fowler will also be there, as well as Shelley Siegel.
So you can learn more about that at our website, conference.americanhumanist.org, and that's going to be this June 7th through 10th in New Orleans. Of course, you can find links to that and to every other speaker that we've had on our show this month at our website, thehumanisthour.org.
You can also like us on Facebook or, and maybe even, Call us on our listener comment line, 202-618-1371. We'd love to hear from you so we can play the Google garbles of you.
You can also subscribe to us via iTunes or RSS feed on that website.
And you can find previous episodes and show notes at thehumanisthour.org.
That's so many things, Todd. It's such a wealth of information.
That's why I have it written down so I can remember what I have to say each month.
The good news is you don't have to remember all those things. You just have to remember thehumanisthour.org or pathos.com/blogs/thehumanisthour. Folks, thank you for listening.
Thank you very much. Enjoyed it and see you next month.